Get closer to Irish rugby with News Talk and Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team.
Gavin Cummins, give the Irish Times here in studio. Hello.
Good evening.
And Eddie O'Sullivan is with us as well. So it's difficult to analyse any performance in isolation, but especially so given the nature of the Italian performance. Eddie, so can we flip this around for a second and pretend we're News Talk Italia and just, with as many specifics as you like, try and tell us just how bad Italy were, even in comparison with recent years.
I think they were pretty awful. I felt bad for Conor O'Shea. I saw his interview with RTE. Shane Horgan interviewed him, and he's talking about the long game and building a kind of a legacy and putting some stability around Italian rugby and pipelines and stuff like that. But it's certainly it's a long way off from where they are now. And I think it's a very ambitious plan, because he's not the first coach to go into Scotland, or sorry, go into Italy and talk about, you know, building a sustainable model for them. But I suppose there's no shock in it either, because if you look at his lineup, it's effectively predominantly Zebre and Treviso players who are pummeled on a weekly basis in the Pro 12, you know. And Zebre this year being particularly woeful. So it's just like they're not in the same class. I mean, there's always a chance that you have an off day against them and they stay in the game. But even the week before Wales, on a wet day in Rome, the first game of the championship, you've got to feel Italy have a chance of maybe causing an upset. But Wales didn't play well, but at the end of the day, they still were a blade of grass away from 40 points, you know. So you just got to worry for Italy that they're really not at the races at this level. They can't sustain the intensity that's thrown at them. They can't stay away from the contact area because they don't have the skill set, and they don't have the depth in their squad. And it's just a really bad situation for them. And one has to only kind of worry for them going to Twickenham, you know, in 2 weeks' time. No, it may not be the massacre maybe everyone expects, but it's just, this is not unusual for Italy, you know, to ship these hidings of the Six Nations. They don't usually do it till the back end, but it's not good at the moment. And I think they're so far off the pace, you got to worry for them.
If they're to have any chance, they need to do what all the other nations are doing. Where's their CJ Stander? Where's their Jared Payne? Where's their Fijian wingers? This is it. They've gone and recruited the best coaches they can find. Like Brendan Venter, you're not going to get any better. An interesting interview to do would be with Steve Aboud, who set up the Irish Academies in 93, who Eddie would know real well, who's in there, but in a year's time or 2 years' time, to see what's been done below the surface, which just needs time. Conor O'Shea, it was a real astute appointment to bring him, to take him from the IRFU. But they've coughed up a 68-pointer, a 63-pointer, as Eddie said, a 30-odd from Wales in bad weather. Eddie Jones has already said right off the bat, I'm going to have a look at things, change my 8 halves, change a few things. We know they're going to put 50 on them and tweak them.
He also said we're going to take them to the cleaners, which was
that England team
great lines.
Will.
The difficulty with them tempting, say, a CJ Stander over is you're going to have to play for Zebre.
Yeah, and that's what they do. But
the best players aren't going to want to do that.
That's going to become much, much harder now when the IRB, or sorry, World Rugby, pass. This becomes a 5-year
residency rule. Yeah, it's going to be a 5-year.
You know, and that's right too. You know, that a 5-year residency rule, I think, is right. But that's coming in. Augustin Pichot has that bit between his teeth now for a couple of years, and that's going to be ran through pretty soon. And that will not help Italy in any way. But even then, like, if you think about it, their whole playing base, like, they have two professional teams. And look at Scotland, who in their halcyon days won Grand Slams, were very competitive in every Six Nations. They gave us a lesson for nearly 19 years every year, home and away. They were scaled down to two rugby teams as their base, and they ship guys overseas, and there's quite a few of them playing, when I say overseas, it's across the border into England, a lot of the cases, or into France. But even Scotland are struggling in the Six Nations. Like, their win against Ireland was their 11th win in 10 years, you know. So you need a player base to play out of. We're very lucky here in that we have a player base of, and we keep them here. We don't send them overseas. We've discussed that before. We have a player base, and it's worked off four teams, which is probably as small as you can have it. You can't go below four teams. And you see Italy, the players aren't as good. They're not the quality we have here. They don't have real schools-based churn out the players that we have. I mean, if you look at schools rugby in Ireland, some of the schools rugby play in Ireland is world class at school.
Yeah, it was a brilliant game today in Donnybrook between Blackrock and Terenure, actually.
But another one, you know, they're phenomenal. You go to Ulster, there's great schools again, Munster. Like, we're delivering them off conveyor belt at schools level, and Italy aren't able to do that, you know. And then they have a player base of two squads, which are, there's a reasonable number of overseas players in those squads as well. So they just don't have the depth. And you don't see that changing. They're not going to suddenly spread rugby to the schools in Italy and every kid wants to play for the Azzurri, you know. That's not their ambition. And I just think it's a very, very steep hill from the climb. It's a very ambitious plan to try and become consistent in the Six Nations. But the Six Nations is not standing still. That's the other point. Like, they're in a race, but everybody's moving as well. And it's a question of how fast you're moving. I just think Italian rugby is going to continue to struggle. There's nothing, you'd love to be wrong, but there's nothing there would tell you that this is going to change. There's no chink of light there.
The opposition notwithstanding, it was a very, very good Irish performance. And so we saw a number of things we didn't see last week, not least when we had the ball in hand. Gav, there was more variation, there was more going on. There was grubber kicks to make sure we weren't kind of crowded out of it, a la Murrayfield the week before. The work at the breakdown was a million miles ahead of what happened at Murrayfield. There was a kind of relentlessness about the whole thing. And you do watch a performance like that and you think, well, how much of what we're doing here is applicable against the bigger sides, and will we see against France in a fortnight's time?
Very little. There was Craig Gilroy as well, which is, again, you got to give credit to the coaches for knowing that that was in that guy, because he's so far down. And there just hasn't been the evidence at Ulster because of fitness and whatnot. No, CJ Stander can't make that kind of impact against the French. He just can't, you know. I don't know.
He had 22 carries for 73 metres, Stander.
Yeah, I think he can shave about 20 metres off that at least against the French. Well, just because of the size, he's running into guys who are going to be bigger than them.
Because every time against Scotland, he was stopped, he was held up. The variation with the ball in hand, is that just something you can do against Italy because they give you so much time and space?
Yeah, no. There was a lot of good things done. Like, it was a very similar response to what New Zealand did after they lost in Chicago. They went to Rome, same stadium, same team, and put on 68 points on them. Not many teams can do that. We put on 63 points on these guys. That's a huge reaction. It was a 9 tries. Paddy Jackson's passing for Earls's first, when the game mattered, Paddy Jackson's passing was the stuff we've seen when he's right on point for Ulster this season, and a bit of last season. He's shown in a test match, when a test match matters, that he can do it. Which, if Johnny Sexton can't train in the next 2 weeks, you have a little bit more faith in Paddy Jackson, and Joey Carberry will probably come onto the bench. But I still imagine Sexton will get there. They're hinting increasingly that he'll be fit again.
Yeah. Schmidt said he will definitely be fit for the French game.
Yeah.
That's what he said publicly. But he's certainly not going to be released to Leinster.
He was definitely fit for other games in the past, and then it was a last minute pull up. So
yeah.
You can't be that dependent on Johnny. If he comes back in for the last 3 games, though, it's huge.
Gav makes the point already, there were a lot of really good things about this, you know, regardless of the Italian performance. So maybe that same question to you. What stood out for you from Ireland's point of view that was very good, and how applicable is it against the bigger teams?
I suppose the thing they were looking for is, you know, accuracy and execution. And you saw, I think, from the start of the game that we were incredibly accurate in everything we did. We had very few sloppy errors. Our accuracy at the breakdown, we actually had 0 turnovers at the breakdown. We won 119 rucks out of 119, which, you know, is a very difficult thing to do. Now, there's less pressure, we're winning collisions, it's easier. But I think there's no doubt that our performance was, you know, 10% up from where it was at Murrayfield. It's what you get when a team underperforms, as we did at Murrayfield. The reaction is to come back stronger. That would be the talk all week in camp, you know, to fix those things that let us down, and we did. We fixed them. We probably, like, you know, when Stander romped over for his hat trick in the 25th minute, you know, you've got to think we were going to absolutely hit 100 at that stage. But we did go to sleep a bit for about 20 minutes, and then when Gilroy ignited things again from himself, and Ringrose had 4 tries in the space of about 13 minutes. I suppose if you're looking for negatives, we went off the boil a bit, and we were sloppy at times there with what we were doing. We lost our shape. But I suppose, to be fair, that happens in every game to some extent. And when you have that sort of dominance, guys maybe lose concentration and the bench is coming on and it disrupts a little. But I think we got the response we wanted. This is what we needed, like a big blowout back on the horse. But, and the but is that it would have been better had Italy given us a game of rugby for about an hour, and then we pulled away and got our bonus point. Because apart from the feel-good factor, it's hard to gauge the value of it apart from the feel-good factor. You know, we weren't really tested. It wasn't a test game. It was almost a train and run.
Yeah, like Parise wasn't even making... Parise for Ringrose's try. If your captain's not putting in the tackles, good night.
Joke,
like,
yeah.
That is a joke. Parise was a turnstile for Ringrose's excellent try.
Yeah.
And Ringrose was excellent in defence. Again, what he does is game on game, he fixes the errors, things that have a problem with him.
I was going to ask you about defensively. There was, you know,
he shot up to him really... All him going, I got to go do this.
But maybe with a bit more polish, the Italians might have got around the corner still. Like, do we feel fully road tested?
No, I thought that was quality what he did. And there was one in each half where he shot out and shut down. One of them was on the Italian hooker where he just dislodged the ball from him. You know, no, that was impressive. That's him again learning.
But that's a good read against an average attack.
I mean,
the point remains that a more polished attack, as you said, Joe, like, I think they could get around the corner because they're not going to play in one line. They're going to play a front line with a secondary outlet on it, like a spot out the back. And if you come up with him, a spot out the back off the second pass will get you every day of the week.
And do the French have that kind of shape about them?
Nah,
they don't. But they're still not. They're not stupid either. You know, like, and they have. The thing the French bring, which Italy don't, and this is the other issue, is they have phenomenal athleticism and individual ability. They don't have a game plan. I mean, I thought they went backwards from Edinburgh or from Twickenham.
Right.
I mean, I thought everyone was talking about that after Twickenham, that they were kind of back in the hunt. You know, they played really well. They should have beaten England that day, except for the Ben Teo intervention. So you give them a lot of credit. And then they go home and you think they're going to ramp it up. And it's a damn squib compared to Twickenham. And, you know, they just are playing off the cuff. They're sloppy with the ball. You know, you see the wings, both the wings are like if they don't break the line on the first step, they're liable to throw it away. Or you saw one of them trying to offload yesterday with three defenders wrapped around him. You know, it's insane, kind of no respect for the football. Like, even Pickham also was brilliant, and Twickenham was pretty poor yesterday, some sloppy moments. And his worst one was a silly penalty. The referee told him to leave the halfback alone. He ignored the referee, came around, mugged the halfback, and gave away a stupid penalty. So the French, and the thing about the French, they'll probably take great heart out of losing by 3 points to Twickenham and beating Scotland and come to Dublin thinking everything's fine. That's why I think after the Paris game, if they show up like Paris, we'll beat them. They show up like Twickenham, it's a different ball game. But which crowd are going to show up? I don't really know.
Very beatable. They are. They look very beatable, and they look very coachable as well. So I wouldn't be too worried about that. There's going to be a huge... It's the physicality of playing France and all that, and it'll be brutal.
Yeah.
But the worst thing that happened to Ireland on the weekend was that England Wales game, simply because Wales can't lose in Cardiff anymore now. And like, they threw everything at not losing that game, and they're going to just repeat that for us. So I don't know if we have what England have shown to beat them on a Friday night in Cardiff. And also now England believe they're invincible, which is a disaster for everyone in the Northern Hemisphere. Like Litoje, Launchbury, Laws, these guys, you kind of can understand why. You know, they're just monsters who refused to be overpowered, refuse to break down.
Well, they're closing in now on 16 games in a row. They're closing in on the New Zealand record.
Dublin's when they break it.
Yeah.
So
they could potentially be going for a Grand Slam and the New Zealand all-time record, which is not to be underestimated.
And if you listen to Eddie Jones after the game, he's like, yeah, there's grit in this team now. And
So Eddie Jones, grit won us the game. Rob Helly, no composure, that lost us the game. There is a theme with Wales, Eddie, of the amount of pressure they exert in a game not being reflected in the scoreboard, which is going back a couple of years now. Why is that?
Because I think they're predictable with the ball. They're playing what's called warm ball, which is physical dominance. And if you're up for it, you can stop them. You know, it's not rocket science to stop them. No, they're very good at it. And they do have some players who can make things happen, you know. And the difference between them in Cardiff and out of Cardiff is, in Cardiff, they play like their lives depend on it. You know, you don't get that intensity off them when you get them out of Cardiff. And I've said from the get-go that I thought we'd get to Cardiff with three wins. No, obviously it was wrong. We flipped in Scotland. But I still think we'll get to Cardiff with two wins, and I still think that's the game. But I thought Howley's substitutions were bizarre, you know. I mean, he took off... he changed the scrum halves.
He's their best player, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Him and Alwyn Jones,
Reece Webb was phenomenal. And I thought I thought that Moriarty was killing Hughes. He was taking Hughes to the cleaners every time, both with and without the ball. So I thought Moriarty and Reese Webb were the two best players. And then it's like they made this preconditioned substitution, which I don't buy into at all. I think it's stupid. Unless a guy is flagging physically and he's tired and he's going to make mistakes. But if a guy is still playing well and lighting it up, and I thought Webb was a big catalyst for Wales. I thought Moriarty was brilliant. And then suddenly their Shepherd's Crook come out and they're gone, you know. And, but I still think just on the general part of Wales, I thought Wales were outstanding. You know, I really, really, they really delivered a massive performance, as they tend to do at home. And it was an enthralling test game. I mean, it was the best test game we've seen for a while. You know, certainly the test game of the Six Nations, but you have to go back a bit to find another one like that, even in the last couple of years. I mean, Wales could have and should have won it. I mean, although I would say the referee was struggling. It was probably the pace of the game, but he was really struggling with it. He had some bizarre calls. I remember one time, you know, he told the player, leave a ball to ruck, and he didn't. He picked it up and he said, play on, you know, that kind of... And the turnover that led to the clearance, which led to England's try, like Liam Williams was on off his feet. He was lying on the ruck. He was lying on the ground. He played the ball on the ground. And the ref said, play on, you know. And it turned out, I mean, if Wales had closed the game out, you don't believe Eddie Jones would have gone off the deep end over that, because they scored from that kick, so there's no point in talking about it. But it was such an intense game that the referee was struggling to stay with it. It was right up there. And some of the phases of attack were relentless, but the defence was just up for it. It was a great game of rugby. I really, really enjoyed every minute of it.
Eddie Jones pulled a little sneaky one as well. Did you see that? He named Itoje at blindside and then played him at lock. Yeah. Itoje's the Terminator, so he is. He's literally just, he's going to get better and better and better. He's going to be one of the best players in the world, and if it isn't already the case. And like Eddie Jones has shrugged afterwards, and he's brilliant in press conferences afterwards. He goes, George Cruz is the best scrummager in the world, or best scrummager in England. Morrow, he's injured, so Morrow's the second. I just, never mind the numbers.
But remember, this is an English team short of five of their pack.
Yeah. Oh, the Vunipolos are going to be back for Dublin, though. That's what they're reporting today.
Well, that's great news.
They'll probably come off the bench in Dublin.
Mm. Colm and Cork raises a point we can't get into now, but why can there not be some form of promotion or relegation to a second tier in the Six Nations, Romania, Georgia and so on? On England, says Sean, to be honest, I didn't actually think
there's a quick answer to that.
Go on.
Never going to happen.
Well, it's never going to happen, but even if it did, like, all right, so now we beat Romania or Georgia by 60 points. Mm. You know, what's the difference?
Yeah.
So
when people talk about going to Tbilisi, they're overestimating, you know, the potential there.
People aren't going to vote to not go to Rome anymore.
That's the other thing.
It's just not going
to
happen.
And it's the people who vote who get to go to Rome.
It's that simple.
To be honest, I didn't think England were that great. Wales threw away excellent possession and field position towards the end of the game. They should have ended England's winning streak, says Sean.
That's true. But John Davis kicked away that ball at the end.
That had to go dead, didn't it?
Yeah, but look what England did, right?
So
George Ford caught the ball, took the exact amount of steps you take. Nice cut, long pass.
Yeah.
Farrell, exact amount of steps you take, nice long pass.
Yeah.
That is, guys, that's something that the Irish team hasn't done, because I don't know if we have a guy of Elliot, A, Elliot Daly's pace, and B, guys who know to take not to take too much out of the ball. And
so what do you think an Irish team might have done there?
I'd say the runner would have run back or would have gone up into the sky. Mm. But it's like the pass, those two lads, because they've been so well coached, they instinctively knew what to do. They knew that your man's pace was there. They also knew they could throw those right to left hand passes spot on without taking that extra yard. And it was...
Is that fair, Eddie? If Davies kicks that ball to an Irish team, what do we do with it?
I can't see them us playing it back like that. I think we'd have probably gone up, set into contact and played off the contact, or there would have been snow on it coming down. There was 22, I think.
Zeebo can throw it, but he can throw those passes, Simon Zeebo, and he's shown it in two games already. But it's whether he does it at the right time.
But we're not doing that. It's not the way we're playing at the moment.
No.
You know, I mean, to be fair, you'd like to see it, but we're not actually playing with that sort of headset on.
Mm.
That's coaching. That's coaching of these guys when they're younger, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Jeremy Guscott was writing on the BBC. He said CJ Stander is untouchable as the best number six in the world right now. Was his sense of things. As amazing as Stander, Heaslip and O'Brien have been, you know, I saw Liam Tolan just floating the notion in the Irish Times today that Josh van der Fleer would bring an awful lot to any back row as well. And Peter O'Mahony, we're hearing, is going to be fit for the French game. That was according to Schmidt.
Well, O'Mahony's the problem.
I don't know about O'Mahony's fitness.
Do you not?
Or no, I don't know about O'Mahony's fitness.
But if he's fit, the problem we have at the lineup, which was not an issue, is I don't think we go into games against... So, maybe France, maybe not. certainly England and Wales with two jumpers. It's going to be a savage pressure on our lineouts with two jumpers, because England and Wales are excellent lineouts. Like Adam Wynne-Jones is a really fantastic lineout technician, and Atoje is so athletic. You know, it's just these guys will put massive pressure, and we saw in Scotland that, you know, the two greys put massive pressure on our lineouts and it creaked. We only two options really, and you can throw it to Jimmy Haslip and you can go to O'Brien, you can throw it to Van der Flier, but they're not go-to guys, and they let you have those spots at the back or something where they can get somebody there in front of you, or they give it to the front where you can't use it. So, like, not having a third jumper is a bit of a drawback, and I think O'Mahony, that's why he comes front and centre, not because any of the other backers aren't playing well. They're all playing well. It's just that, you know, it's a price for having those three guys in the field. Now, Manny is no slouch throwing the field either. He brings you that line-out presence in attack and defence, and he's a great ball carrier as well. And, he's right up there with the other three. So that's going to be, I think, a discussion. Whether they'll make the call or not, I don't know.
Just on the way Sean O'Brien comes back from injuries, it normally takes two, maybe three games. So he is primed for a big one against France. Yeah. If you just look at just go back to his career in the last few years, when he comes back, the key thing is now, can he play? Because if he gets back up to the standard we know and love, we have to get three massive test matches out of him, which just hasn't been happening, unfortunately.
Tubbs in Cork, Eddie, wants to know how you think we'll go against the French scrum. We beasted the Scots, but they were roasted against the French.
I think we'll be fine, you know. I'm not worried about the French scrum. I think they'll go after us like they always do. It's just French tradition. And you don't know on the day, look, just somebody packs some prop, brings something different that you don't expect, or the referee decides you're illegal and you can get in trouble. But like, you couldn't judge the Scottish scrum. Like, we murdered the Scottish scrum. In fact, the worst thing happened to us in Edinburgh is that there was no scrums in the second half. Like, it would have been great if there was a few scrums. We would have got more penalties and more field position. And you saw, like, yesterday, like, although, you know, when was it Ross Ford came on, it tightened up. But having said that, I'm not worried about the French scrum, even though I think they'll go after us. I think we'll be fine. It won't be easy, but we should be fine there.
So explain to me then what you're expecting against the French from Ireland with the ball in hand. Are we saying that we will revert to what we did against Scotland and one-up runners? And
no.
Okay, so what we saw in Rome in that sense is we're going to see more of that against the French. That's how we have to do this.
Yeah, if we keep the ball alive against France, you know, through 10, 12, 15 phases, we'll pick them off, provided in the process of keeping it alive, we don't run into brick walls, because they are physical. They are very athletic. So if we take the one-off runner route, it'll be hugely attritional, and I think we'll struggle to win the game line. But if we're selective and get a balance, so sometimes we plow it up and sometimes we go around the corner and we get to the outside channels, I think we'll pick them apart, because their defence is like their attack. It's whatever you think yourself. Mm. You know, I mean, they're vulnerable because they don't have discipline. Guys come out of the line, guys go off script. And I think patience with them is going to pay dividends, but patience in a smart way, not just running into brick walls, but moving them around and keeping the ball. I think good things will happen. And their wings are very poor defensively. They're great with the ball, but they've no idea what they're doing without it. So I think that's the order of the day, is patience, continuity, but not not dominance in the collision, like where we're looking to win every collision, because I think that will be a reach for us against France. Now, having said that, Scotland had reasonable success at that yesterday, but I thought they dropped their intensity from their defence in Twickenham. And it was the fear factor going to Twickenham that they actually fronted up more in defence, or that they defended softer yesterday. But you can't depend on them defending soft in Dublin, and your game plan is they defend soft, we'll run over them. If they don't, you're in trouble. So I don't see why you should take that risk. We should probably play a little bit of east-west rugby as well as north-south, you know, keep them all off balance.
The decision maker will see everything Eddie just said there. If the decision maker is Johnny Sexton, there's absolutely no concern. Paddy Jackson showed enough evidence that he might be the man to do that as well, but we know for certain that if it's Johnny Sexton, everything that Eddie has made reference to there will come to pass.
Okay. Meanwhile, a penny for the thoughts of Finn Russell, which was one of the more bizarre moments.
It just fell off his tee. See, well, he's rushing it. He didn't take his time. He's not clearly not a test match place kicker, because Laidlaw's always there.
Yeah.
And it just because he didn't do his routine and didn't do his job correctly, it just fell off the tee, and it was hugely costly 2 points.
Oh yeah, it was crucial.
I can't believe he didn't pick it up and hit a drop goal.
You see, he just didn't realise he could do that, I presume.
Well, I know. I saw number 14 kid in Black Rock 20 years ago figuring that out. It always struck me. So, I mean, you would think an international player would know that you don't have to kick it off the ground. And to kick drop goals all the time, you know, or they used to do to get back to the halfway quickly.
Yeah.
Like, he's just a stop and hit the drop goal. I mean, the way he hit it was never going over. Like, I just thought it was bizarre. But I thought he had a poor enough game overall. I think he had one. He has those games where he can be really good, and he has those games where he can be a liability. Mm. But even again, his kicking is poor. I mean, Conor Murray blocked him down. We should have scored against it. He had another one yesterday, like an aimless grubber up a short side, like into a wall of defenders. Like, I think he mixes the good and sometimes the very good with the bad and the very bad sometimes. I don't think he's consistent.
Yeah.
And certainly that was, to me, was a disaster. He didn't figure out how to do a stop and hit a drop goal. If the drop goal got blocked, I'd say fair enough.
Yeah.
But like, what he hit was never going over.
No. Yeah, Wales should beat them.
I think so.
Yeah. Where are John O'Gibbs, actually? Have you?
Oh, John O'Gibbs. Sorry,
I meant to say it.
Where did this come out of?
Well, it looked like it was being teed up, if you're reading the media, that he was going to be the next Connacht coach. So this is brilliant by Ulster, because he's as good a coach as you could get to bring back into the Irish system, because he's completely primed now. Like, when Leinster first had him, he'd just quit playing rugby.
Yeah.
So he was really learning his trade there still as a forwards coach.
Yeah.
Now he's learnt his trade in Claremont, and like, it's exactly what Les Kiss wants. And there's a backs coach coming in as well now.
Yeah.
He hasn't appointed it yet. So Les Kiss is getting the backroom team that he really needed, that he feels he needs to bring Ulster up to the level of Munster and
different
Leinster.
Different phrases positions mean different things at different clubs in rugby. So explain to me what director of rugby Les Kiss and head coach John O'Gibbs, how they will be working together now.
Yeah, okay.
Do we know?
Well I've talked to Les about this before, and he is a hands-on director of rugby. Look, they all are, okay? Like Razzie Erasmus is as well. But he obviously wanted to bring in a coach, and the title that they've given to get John O'Gibbs must have been head coach. You know, it's similar enough with Stuart Lancaster, except Leinster had kind of snookered themselves, and Leo's called the head coach, so they just called him the senior coach. Like, whatever, you know, it doesn't really matter. But John O'Gibbs, good appointment.
So like, John O's coming in to work very much under Les Kiss.
It's a good appointment that Connacht really wanted to make, I think.
Right, okay. And is there, okay. A good appointment, Eddie?
Yeah, it's very smart. I mean, I think, you know, that's a bit of a home run for Ulster to get a guy of his experience. And he's not coming cold into Ireland. His experience at Leinster stand him in good stead.
Yeah.
He's highly respected. Yeah. I think it's all about, it's really terminology, head coach, senior coach, whatever. It doesn't matter at the end of the day. When they sit down on the table, they'll dice up their roles and they get on with their job. But Les is still the gaffer, you know,
man,
so it doesn't matter, you know.
Okay.
Doak and Clark look like they're not going to be retained this summer.
Okay. Gents, we're just out of time. Gavin Cummins, the Irish Times. Thank you very much, Eddie O'Sullivan. Thanks very much.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.